Welcome to episode 27 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
At the moment, we're spending a lot of time looking forward to each episode of The Bad Batch on a week-to-week basis, but that leaves us with a gap of no Star Wars material between those episodes. We found ourselves in the last week or so filling that gap by going through some older behind-the-scenes documentaries. I've always been a fan of behind-the-scenes documentaries, the makings of Star Wars and so forth, going right back to when the making of Star Wars first screened on actual New Zealand television in about 1978. Over the past week, we've been looking at, in particular, prequel material. There's a lot of this actually on Disney Plus. You have to go digging into the extras for each of the major movies to find it, but they haven't by any means got all of the extra behind-the-scenes bonus-type material on Disney Plus yet. I think some of the other cool documentaries like The Making of Star Wars are actually showing up on Disney Plus in other regions. We don't have them in New Zealand yet. But having said all that, there are ways to find some of this other behind-the-scenes material.
Back in the prequel era, they were pretty good about making little featurettes that were sort of drip-fed out leading up to the release of the films. Now, some of these were released on the now-defunct hyperspace sort of fan website portal for StarWars.com, but a certain number of fans have tracked down these little behind-the-scenes featurettes and put them on accessible places like YouTube. Whether or not this is completely sort of, you know, within the copyright realms is, you know, up for debate, because these aren't actually accessible in through official channels. They're not on very many of the DVDs or the Blu-ray releases or through Disney Plus. So it's neat that these things are archived online somewhere that you can access them. And I've really enjoyed going back and watching a lot of these ones. I remember watching them as they came out in the lead up to the prequels things. One of the ones that always sticks in my mind is the one where they sort of reveal the process of designing General Grievous. I always remember that. It was sort of tied in with sort of this big reveal about the new sort of villain for episode three.
Yeah, it's funny looking back on before those prequel movies came out when they were just teasing us. But I think that those webisodes type things, like I say, we'll put a link to the YouTube channel where we've been watching them from down below. I find them a real good bang for the buck. There's a little bit of Talking Heads type material, but they really just actually straight up show us a lot of really good juicy content.
One of the documentaries that I always quite enjoy going back and rewatching is the 2-hour length behind the scenes of The Phantom Menace. And I always find myself wishing that they had done something of a similar length for episode 2 and 3. Yep. We know from these little webisodes and some of the little featurettes that appear on the DVD sets and things like that, that there must have been a lot of on-set behind-the-scenes footage taken during the filming of these scenes. I just wish that maybe they'd do a bit more sort of retrospective and sort of put some of this footage out there in newly sort of developed behind the scenes, knowing that it's just such a good platform with Disney Plus for the sort of behind the scenes stuff. We're seeing some of these little fun little tidbits, you know, doing like The Simpsons shorts, you know, it's just for fun, you know, like doing that Maggie Simpson Star Wars little short for May the 4th. You know, there's like this platform just to push out this sort of small short form or long form documentary stuff, particularly with the focus of having things like National Geographic on the channel. They're doing more sort of documentary focused content, and I think it would be fun for them to go back and do some of these sort of deep dives, because they must have absolutely hours and hours of behind the scenes footage that hasn't seen the light of day.
So new stuff would absolutely be good. In the short term, at least, I'd love to see just everything that's ever been available put on there in one shape or another. I talked about just absolutely loving when The Making of Star Wars showed up on TV in 1978. I kind of fell in love with behind the scenes material back then. I remember seeing things like how they made the land speeder move on its arm with the mirrors underneath it to, you know, hide the mechanism and show sand. And it didn't destroy the illusion of the movies. I just really felt like, you know, just, whether it's the fictional aspects or the behind-the-scenes aspects, just anything from Star Wars, I just can't get enough of. Making of Star Wars and SPFX, The Empire, From The Empire Strikes Back, the other documentary of that early era. Watched that over and over, rented it on VHS from the rental store. There are a couple on Disney Plus, since you're talking about favorites that you really like. That episode one documentary. There's a couple of others that are on Disney Plus that I fully recommend. If you haven't watched them, you should absolutely totally go in and watch Empire of Dreams, directed by Kevin Burns. I love this in its own right. We also had the privilege of talking to the director, Kevin Burns, a few years back. We've got that interview on SWNZ talking about that documentary. One of the reasons I really like that documentary is that it examines the phenomenon of Star Wars, as well as the sort of the making of Star Wars. It examines the context in which it was released and why it was such a big hit with fans and so forth. Kevin Burns sadly passed away just late last year. Empire of Dreams came out in 2004 on the original trilogy DVD. It is on Disney Plus. Do check it out if you haven't seen it yet. It's a full 150-minute documentary. And the other really quite good one is a much more recent one that's on Disney Plus, The Skywalker Legacy, that came out around the time of the final sequel film. And that examines the whole, again, franchise phenomenon, fandom, all in one hit. But it talks about it from a sort of, if I remember correctly, a bit more of an in-world perspective about the, like they say, the title is The Skywalker Legacy. And it has a really sort of emotive style that just makes you fall in love all over again with the whole Star Wars franchise.
I think particularly with the sort of when DVDs were new, there was quite a push to put bonus material on it. Yep. They were trying to convince people to buy Blu-ray DVDs and sort of to convert off VHS, and sort of because you had a new format, you could fit things on with the menus and things like that. So there was like these special features and little featurettes and trailers and behind the scenes and director's commentaries and things like that. And I think we don't see quite as much of that in the new era, particularly since people have progressed from Blu-ray to streaming or digital copies, where there isn't quite the desire to have bonus stuff, I think. But I think for franchises like Star Wars, there is still a wider appreciation for the behind the scenes content. We obviously have fans have this connection to the people behind the camera. That's why we collect autographs. We go to conventions to meet the people. So I really do hope that we see more behind the scenes footage sort of out to the fans in the coming years, particularly as we hit these big anniversary milestones as well. As collectors will know, the action figures are being released with a big gold 50th Lucasfilm anniversary, being 50 years since George Lucas founded Lucasfilm, just prior to releasing American Graffiti. So there is kind of this whole nostalgia thing, looking back at the history of Star Wars and Lucasfilm.
Yeah, the Disney Gallery's behind-the-scenes material that came out with The Mandalorian is good. I certainly enjoy many aspects of it. But they had quite a lot of that sort of roundtable talking heads type component to it, which is fine in metered doses, but I really just like the meat of those behind-the-scenes stuff. I just like to see things being done on set, stuff that was actually filmed during production in some ways, even more than just people talking about it. Having said that, some of the stuff we were watching just over the last week, there's a lot of George Lucas just talking, and I don't think I'll ever get tired of hearing George Lucas talk about Star Wars.
Yeah. I think in particular, one thing that sort of stood out to me about some of the prequel behind the scenes was the amount of time that they were actually speaking to actors on set in their costume.
They went to great lengths to collect material, I think. It felt like that. They really went to great lengths.
You got them sort of talking about what it was like to film on set while they're actually on set, not just sort of doing a press thing with like some set pieces behind them and things like that. They were sort of in the moment, you know, rehearsing their fight scenes or doing a particular scene, and they're sort of talking about, you know, what they're doing there in the moment. It just sort of feels like that little piece of you getting to see what it was really like behind the camera, not just hearing somebody's sort of reflections on their experience afterwards.
Yes. No, really, it feels like that there was a marketing push before the movies came out that really tied into that behind the scenes aspect of the making of, and I think they're going out of their way to collect material in order to build up hype.
And particularly if you are a costumer or somebody that likes to build replica props or sets, seeing these behind the scenes things is just that little more extra sort of material to help with your reference. A lot of costume reference is from the behind the scenes footage, because you get these moments where you haven't got the gloss of the finished film or special effects over the top of it. You get to see the costumes in a sort of realistic environment under normal lighting rather than sometimes the dim lighting of the Star Wars world.
You see characters and sets without the sort of cinematic atmosphere, just with straight up clear lighting that shows all the detail. Speaking of behind the scenes stuff, one of the other articles that we posted on SWNZ that I'd encourage you to go check out if you haven't seen it is a bit of a tribute to award-winning Kiwi Mandalorian cinematographer Baz Idoine. Barry, aka Baz, is a Kiwi who started his film career at TVNZ, working photocopy machines as he worked hard to climb the ladder, started working on a number of different camera roles, eventually got cinematography and DOP, director of photography roles, building up to working on Rogue One. So it's worth just recognizing that, you know, there are a good lot of Kiwis on both sides of the camera in the Star Wars universe. And Baz Idoine won an Emmy Award for his work on The Mandalorian in the category of Outstanding Cinematography for a Single Camera Series, specifically for Chapter 7, The Reckoning, which he got in conjunction with Greg Fraser. If we take a look now at New Zealand store reports, things that have been happening in the retail sector around New Zealand, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about stuff that's been hitting people's mailboxes more than we are about stuff that's just gone up for pre-order, just by the nature of the way things have unfolded in the last week. A lot of stuff that people have pre-ordered over the last few months has suddenly been showing up in their inboxes all at once, which is kind of fun and interesting. So we've seen in the SWNZ Facebook group that people have been receiving their 6-inch Clone Wars Black Series figures. These are the figures that are coming on the recreations of the 4-inch Captain Rex backing cards. They're available currently at EB Games, but yeah, they're shipping now and people have been showing those off in the SWNZ Facebook group. A few new Vintage Collection action figures have also been shipping. In particular, the wave that included Din Djarin and Cara Dune. Now, there was a lot of conversation online about the Cara Dune figures being cancelled, but everyone that got a pre-order in, as far as I know at this point, has actually been receiving these. We got these from Pop Guardian. We put our pre-order in a little while back, and it's cool to get a couple of 4-inch Mandalorian figures to go with our limited, but hopefully growing in the future, Mandalorian 4-inch figure line. Also Mandalorian figures shipping from all the major retailers. The Retro Collection line of Mandalorian figures, 7 figures in total. They're fun to get. And I'm going to have a little bit of a closer look at those in another video. We're probably not going to do that on the SWNZ YouTube channel, but we'll take a look on our personal YouTube channel, Villa Varakino. So stay tuned. I'll put a link to that for us to take a closer look at those Mandalorian Retro Collection vintage figures very shortly. We also got in hand an example of the Episode 1 6-inch figures that are coming out at the moment. There was a wave that included Qui-Gon, Jar Jar, and Mace Windu. We got Qui-Gon showing up in a box on our doorstep in the past week. This is a very fun 6-inch version of the red card from 1999. It's good to have that one in hand.
It'll be quite nostalgic for a lot of collectors. I really like the presentation. It does feel like a scaled up figure from 1999.
Well, the figure itself's got all the amazing detail of the modern production, but the card is super nostalgic.
Yeah. And the foil finish is really quite pretty.
There's something about that bold red that just hits the right note.
That strong Darth Maul branding across the whole line. It would be fun to see if they really just run away with this whole let's make all the 4-inch figures in 6-inch scale. I mean, Gentle Giant is still doing jumbo figures of the original Kenner, and yeah, that's a large scale and a large price point. It's going to be a bit restrictive display space wise if you want to be a completionist with that line, but it's still popular. It's still proving that the demand jumbo is figures, there.
They maybe slowed down a little bit, and there's still some gaps. I'm dying to get an FX7 vintage figure in that jumbo line at some point. And we may see more of these 6-inch recreations of older card styles. We're probably more likely to get smaller runs of examples of each different card back, and there's some really fun card backs to celebrate and recreate rather than full runs. But in some ways, I don't prefer that, just some representatives. And, you know, in our collection, we tend to open all our figures, but we almost as a rule, keep at least one or two examples of each new car back as waves come out, just because, you know, looking back, it's fun to actually remember what things looked like when they were on the shelves back in the day when they were first available. So I just remembered something that I was going to talk about and throw it into the mix. The thing that sparked my recollection, those episode 1 6-inch figures first started as a Celebration exclusive, didn't they? There's a Darth Maul and Obi-Wan, I hope I'm right on that came out as convention exclusives. Speaking of conventions, today was a little bit of an interesting day for people who are still intending to go to Star Wars Celebration, in that the hotel bookings opened up. Quite a lot of activity online. They opened up at 7 a.m. New Zealand time, I understand. And as expected, I think they moved pretty quick. So again, we've talked about the complexities of that and the uncertainty of that.
The hotels are currently only available to book if you have an existing ticket. They emailed out a link and a specific code so that if you have an existing valid ticket to Celebration, you were able to book up to 2 rooms per ticket. And no word yet on when they will open up tickets.
No.
That'll be much closer, I think, to the event. So
I saw in response to comments, Star Wars Celebration, that the official moderators on Facebook were saying, yeah, like you say, a lot closer to the time, but that could be months away yet before any other tickets open up for Star Wars Celebration. So that whole situation is still quite mixed and uncertain.
You do have to wonder how many people do still hold tickets because of not one, but 2 date changes. Mm-hmm. There's been, you know, multiple opportunities for people to cancel their tickets due to uncertainty or the date changes. As some Americans have pointed out, the new dates fall on a Memorial Weekend in the US, which means that it does clash with timelines for certain people around universities, schools, and work.
Well,
so
it does 2 things. It may interrupt other people's other plans, but it may also mean that there's other people traveling into the Anaheim area and into the Disneyland area.
Yes, particularly because it is within a stone's throw of Disneyland. That means that the hotel prices and hotel demand is going to be particularly strong in that area for that weekend. So it's going to be rough for people that want to go but can't book a hotel or even buy tickets at this point. It's going to be a bit of a tight rush.
So if you're still holding a ticket, you know, there's absolute positives to that strategy. But do think about your accommodation if you haven't got that locked in. So a little bit of a deviation there that stemmed from talking about figures and conventions. But I was just talking about, you know, local New Zealand store reports, things that are showing up in people's hands and on doorsteps right now. And the other really fun one that was quite unexpected is that the First Order Black Series Stormtrooper helmet, and you know we talk about Black Series quite positively here in the last few podcasts, that has been showing up very early, months early, from specifically Pop Guardian again, who had extremely good pricing on that Black Series pre-order. It's still listed as being available for pre-order from Mighty Ape and EB Games, but with still future release dates. Mighty Ape, for instance, isn't expecting to ship that before September. They may actually ship it earlier, but somehow Pop Guardian actually got it out the door and shipped months earlier, and that's very cool. That's another one that we'll be looking at a little more closely on our personal channel in an unboxing video shortly.
The amount of Hasbro figures that have been shipping to fans in the last week makes me think we must have gotten a huge container lot from Hasbro, finally landed in New Zealand, and all the stock is going out to fans. So it's been quite an exciting week if you're a collector, having all these goodies hitting your doorstep that you may have sort of paid
it is all Hasbro
months
stuff,
ago.
So
yeah.
That shipping container from Australia must have made its way over or something, because, Hasbro New Zealand gets all the stuff from Australia at this point, as far as I understand. So, big lot coming in through the docks and distributing out to stores and people who have pre-ordered them. Lots of fun. And to round out our conversations about New Zealand store reports, the other thing not shipping yet, well, one of them is shipping, half of this listing is shipping yet, is the deluxe Bounty Hunter Pop figures at most retailers of Pop Vinyl figures from Funko. So this is the line of 7 figures from memory that have interconnecting bases and a backdrop that forms a diorama. Previously released was Boba Fett, currently out for pre-order now is Bossk. They're available from Mighty Ape and other retailers of Funko Pops for the price of about $64.
A little higher priced compared to the usual sort of $24-$25 for a standard Funko Pop.
Yeah, they're calling them deluxe, but it's really just a base and a backdrop, but they do interconnect.
Yeah.
in a fun way. I think the way they've designed this, and unfortunately, is that the interconnectedness is not symmetrical between the figures, so you do have to connect them in a specific order. You can't pick and choose if you want that background diorama to work, as far as I can tell from the pictures released so far.
At least the dioramas do look okay in a standalone form. Yes. So if you have just a favorite bounty hunter, you can get just that one, and the background behind it does look okay on its own. But yeah, if you want to line them all up together, they will fit together in a specific order. I guess it will look somewhat like the lineup as we see the bounty hunters in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a very impressive, if not expensive, lineup to get all of them all together, particularly at that higher price point. They're almost three times the price for the extra plastic backdrop piece. But if you're a bounty hunter or a Funko completionist, these are going to be a great additions to your collection.
And haven't got it up on the STMNZ website yet and haven't seen it available locally, but it was just announced today. I saw these cool comic style range of Funko Pop figures coming out. So I think that from memory there was a Stormtrooper, a Darth Vader, a Luke Skywalker, and a C-3PO. These should be showing up for pre-orders at some point locally. They seem to be based on the old Marvel comics, and they have a paint application that kind of tries to recreate that line art style, and I really like these. The Stormtrooper mold that they're using at the moment is different from the very first iterations of the Stormtroopers. It's got a cool sculpt with properly shaped eyes rather than the round dot eyes of the first generation Stormtroopers. And with this cool new paint apps, these are quite fun. So do look out for us talking about those on the STMNZ website when they become available for orders shortly.
They're quite artistic in the way that they've got the shading and the colours, but then they're not so sort of arty like the ones where the sort of the artist series where they take a standard Funko and it's kind of paint splattered and graffitied and things like that. It's kind of a bit in the middle. I quite like them. It's also not quite as sort of wild as like some of the they did a range of 4-inch figures where they had the really odd colors, because in some of the vintage comics, some of the colors were like all mixed up or wrong.
Darth Vader with hints of green and so
forth. Yeah, but it looks like they've kind of given like that comic shading.
The only artwork. Really interesting quirk about it is Luke with the red lightsaber, because in the top corner, the comics, the little panel on the top corner of the vintage Marvel comics that they used to indicate the comic title and comic line, at some instances Luke's lightsaber showed up with various colors. So this is really interesting that this pop vinyl Luke Skywalker figure has a red lightsaber.
I noticed that a lot of Funko figures do stay true to original details. Some of the Funko Pops include details that cannot be seen in the movies. They're almost
good for costume reference occasionally, yes, in a weird way.
For some of the movies, you see that there are details or specific poses that show off some details that you don't actually see in the movie or series. So, yeah, they must get some pretty nifty reference material from these licenses.
Yeah, that applies even for non-Star Wars stuff, doesn't it? It's an interesting little trait. Okay, so let's talk about last week's episode of The Bad Batch, episode 5, entitled Rampage. This was the Baby Rancor episode, a fairly tight standalone episode we've seen a little bit of, but when you stop and think about it for a moment, there's quite a lot of background material that is continuing the main overarching thread as well. Bad Batch goes to Ord Mantell to try and find out more about the bounty hunter that they encountered on Pantora. They speak to a Trandoshan named Sid, who says she will give them the information if they help her out with a quest that she requires settled. And that quest turns out to be the recapture of a juvenile rancor from slavers. And by the end of the episode, we find out that Bib Fortuna is the mediator for that quest, and the rancor is ultimately destined for Jabba's palace on Tatooine. So this episode did a few things. It pointed out that the Bad Batch are going to require money on an ongoing basis just to survive, and that one method of achieving that is just mercenary quests. It also progressed their understanding of Fennec Shand and who she is, but not to any great extent. So it's laid out a little bit of a trajectory for future episodes in terms of what we might see Bad Batch doing for the next little while.
Yeah, it let us know that Fennec Shand was not a one-off, that this is going to be sort of an underlying thread continuing forward. Bad Batch don't, they know that she's working as a direct client, not like a, not like sort of like a bounty token, like we sort of see in The Mandalorian, where they sort of pick up jobs from the Bounty Hunter Guild. She's working directly for someone. Who that is at this point is still kept under wraps, that even other people don't know exactly who she's working for. So I think they're gonna, you know, keep this a little bit of an underlying thread, gonna keep us guessing who is paying for her to try and capture Omega. And we see a few other sort of callbacks. I'm fond of seeing Ord Mantell. It's a planet that's referenced all throughout Star Wars, and it's a planet that you can visit in the video games. So
the first time it's technically referenced as A New Hope, because the Mantellian Severip, i.e. the Severip from Ord Mantell, is a chess piece in the Hollow Chest in the Digirook board game. But yeah, obviously the Bounty Hunter on Ord Mantell is referenced in Empire Strikes Back. It's a fun planet to really throw into the mix. I enjoy that too.
And the slavers that we see that have captured the Rancor in this one, if you're a Clone Wars fan, you may recognize these from way back in the Clone Wars. And we see that sort of, I guess, a little bit more of the underworld that I guess the Bad Batch is going to be encountering now that they are sort of finding that in order to evade the Empire, continue to get money, supplies, and connections so that they continue to hide, they're going to have to sort of play around in the underworld. We see Hunter being a little bit hesitant to kind of take on the idea of being mercenaries to, in order to basically earn money.
But like you said, not only do they not have money, they don't have a lot of friends at the moment.
Yeah. So I think we're going to see maybe a little bit more of that, and whether that's going to make them more friends or enemies running around. Because obviously they've got a certain sort of moral code, you know, being soldiers of the Republic, it's going to be hard for them to sort of pick and choose what they do in order to survive and hide. But I'm really going to see if they play on that a little bit more. Difficult situations. This one wasn't so much of a difficult situation in terms of a decision making, just more of a logistics, like how are they going to catch the Rancor?
Yeah.
And obviously Omega is finding more about particularly
the underworld, as you say, because as the Bad Batch are forced to traverse the darker aspects of the galaxy, the darker alleyways of the galaxy, so to speak, that is becoming Omega's first window on the reality of life outside Kamino, which is a little bit of a shock, quite an abrupt exposure. At the moment, she's far from tainted by it. You see that she still sees everybody as a potential friend. The Feline child, who was initially mistakenly identified as Muchi by the Bad Batch, Omega makes a quick bond with her, and it was very cute seeing them sort of wave goodbye. So she sees everybody as a friend in this instance, but she's getting more and more exposed to the underbelly of the galaxy, which could be a bit challenging.
But I still like that they're still giving some sort of childlike moments for her, because she's still young. Like, she has her little clone trooper doll, and she repaints it to be, as she says, a Bad Batcher. So it's got like sort of the dark gray and red, and the way she talks to the gonk droid is really cute. And the other little moment of watching Wrecker basically squat with the gonk droid on his shoulders, using him as like a weight for doing exercises with. There's still these little fun little moments in there.
Somehow he does that still in armor though.
Yeah.
Having walked up steps in armor of a similar sort of configuration. That's quite impressive.
Yeah. But I like that they've still got some moments in there, because it is an animated show. It is going to appeal to children and a younger generation of Star Wars fans, with still having the sort of slightly more sort of in-depth storylines for adults to really appreciate the sort of nuanced moments.
Yeah, and the other thing that really helps it connect, or helps the longer-standing fan connect with it, callbacks to other aspects of the franchise. So I really enjoyed seeing Bib Fortuna again, first in hologram form, but then shows up in person on Ord Mantell. They did a really good representation of the Gamorrean guards. That was fun. I like seeing them in their classic Tatooine Jabba's Palace configuration. So they styled the Gamorrean guards really, really closely. But something that you mentioned earlier, before we got onto the podcast, was that the overall design of the Rancor was kind of interesting.
It kind of reminded me of the very early years of the Clone Wars, where we had like Rota the Hutt, and there was a certain sort of, I don't want to say clunkiness, yeah, but it's a little bit of an over-stylized approach to some of the animals. When we see the immense progress when it comes to the human characters, like the Bad Batch, the armor details, the face details, it's really there. And then every now and again, we sort of get this jolt back to the early Clone Wars where, and obviously if it's a one-off episode, they're not going to spend quite as much time developing the look and detail of a character or specifically creature.
Oh, I don't think it comes down to that. Standalone, I think they made a conscious choice in this to make the Rancor quite stylized as an infant, and personally I would have liked something just a shade more realistic.
Yeah, it kind of feels like they deliberately made it not vicious because they kind of knew where the storyline was going to go. So right at the end we see Omega riding on it,
yep,
and we sort of see that, oh yeah, it's a cute pet, you know, like it's not going to tear them limb from limb or anything like that. So they might have made it a little more sort of cuddly in its design, knowing where the plot point was going to go, and make it not so maybe scary for younger viewers. So I can kind of understand where they're going to go. I know in the world of Star Wars, you can go quite scary and mean with some of the beasts that they have invented, but this one sort of felt like they were deliberately keeping it. Obviously, they kept it young for the plot point, and that they can just catch it and ride it rather than having a full-size Rancor. But yeah, it's, I think it was interesting, just as a side note, seeing Omega pick up one of the sort of, what do you call it?
It was the Zygerian energy bow.
Yeah, yeah. So we're seeing her sort of picking up weapons.
Yeah.
A few times, you know, she took a blaster off Hunter.
She didn't use it in this episode, but she does use it in the trailer. So that's not a spoiler, but they're going to come back to that story, that plot point.
Yeah, so we're seeing her sort of becoming familiar and not scared of weapons, which is interesting because we haven't seen her really sort of really see what she can do when it comes to her skills.
The other clue into her potential was that she was the one that recognized, unraveled, whatever, Sid's deception, pretending not to be Sid in the opening scenes. But whereas Bad Batch didn't pick up on the fact that the person they were talking to was in fact the informant that they were seeking.
Yes. I'm kind of curious to see if they are going to reveal that she is force sensitive in some manner. We have certainly seen in some of the Star Wars material out there the concept of cloning force sensitives.
Or imbuing clones with force sensitivity.
Yes.
By one mechanism or another, yeah.
Is that why she's so sought after? Because being able to create an army of force-sensitive beings for the Empire. We know the Empire does utilize force-sensitives with the Inquisitors. You know, this concept goes all the way back to, you know, Mara Jade in old books and comics, and we see it in the new series with the Inquisitors, and they're even in the modern video games and things like that. So it would be an interesting twist if they sort of brought back that. Obviously, with the clone troopers being central on the Bad Batch, we haven't got the Jedi and a lot of the sort of force users. We've got sort of more regular day-to-day people in the sort of underworld. Obviously, the clone troopers, these are sort of enhanced clone troopers. They're not regular people. They all have very unique special abilities. But that would be an interesting sort of piece of the puzzle, that she's shown herself to be very intuitive.
Yes.
Which may be their way of hinting that she can sense things more than the clone troopers can.
Speaking of hints, they did hit on Wrecker's headaches again, which I'm sure, I don't want to dwell on that too much
that
now.
That does make me worry.
We speculated a little bit last week, but yeah, that's not going away.
I do like him as a character, particularly the way that he reacts to Omega. I think it's a neat sort of dynamic. And I mean, I'm honestly worried about all of the Bad Batch. You know, it's sort of like, you know, with things like the Clone Wars, we know the Jedi are going to die. But with the Bad Batch, we don't know where these characters are in 20 years. We don't know if they're still running around. We know there's very limited sort of concrete material. We know from Rebels that Rex and a couple of the other clones do survive to the Rebellion era, because we see them with Phoenix Squadron and sort of the beginnings of the Rebellion just before A New Hope. But when it comes to the Bad Batch, we really don't know where they're going to end up, what their ultimate fate is. Will we see some epic showdown with the Empire at some sort, and they kind of sacrifice themselves for the greater good? Who knows? So I'm nervous because I'm really enjoying these characters and I want them. Yeah. But then Happily Ever After isn't necessarily a common thing in the Star Wars universe.
Well, not when you're filling in gaps between known points in the timeline and the chronology as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the thing with Boba Fett. We didn't know if he was going to get much more than the ending he got from Return of the Jedi. And now we're like, aha, he's got more. That's exciting. But not every character gets that sort of continuation beyond their initial storyline.
Having said that, the galaxy is a really big place. We can't expect everybody to be referenced in the future just because they've shown up in the past part of the timeline. So
yeah. We know that from the earlier episode with the Deserter clone, that some of them do just harbor the desire to just hide,
into the sunset,
and just live out the rest of their days, living a peaceful life.
Because he just disappeared again at the end of that episode. Back to where they were.
He would have disappeared with his family into the underground to just live a peaceful life and stay out of the limelight. Obviously, the Bad Batch feels like they have a duty, that they have something to earn, because they don't seem to be wanting to just disappear and become, find families and things like that. They seem to have some sort of driven purpose. At this point, obviously, Fennec Shand chasing them is giving them something to focus on in the immediate term, and I guess trying to sort of protect Omega. But there's so many questions, and I wasn't sure that this was going to instill that kind of excitement, not really knowing where the storyline was going to go. We know it was about clone troopers, but how...
No, there's more to each episode than you think. When you actually start to have a conversation about it, there's a lot more going on, and that's what makes it fun to talk about here and now, frankly.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to each episode.
Yeah, and we're not that far off, as we said last week. By the time we talk about these in the Friday podcast, we're not that far off from the next episode. Looking forward to that tonight. But on that note, that's about it for this installment. I guess we are done doing talking. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for all the bits and pieces that are going to show up over the coming week. Jump over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.